It is April the 27th, 2024, and this is The Future of Photography.
The Future of Photography.
Ooh, it's good to be back. Chris here, and with me, Jeremiah and Adrian. Thank you guys for holding up the fort.
Oh, yeah, we had fun.
we struggled. We struggled with the technology. We're now a week behind on publishing as well. So it's sorry about that, listeners. But welcome back, Chris, to guide us back to the ways of smooth production and high production values.
Let's see for that. Yeah, exactly. Because something technical changed just the other day, so I'm still worried that everything is gonna just collapse.
Something technical this way comes.
Yeah. So anyway, it is a new episode, and we want to talk about, as you've seen in the title, odd cameras. Yeah. Who had the idea?
I have to admit it was I.
So
I thought, over the years, any kind of weirdo camera that just pops in front of me, I'm always really interested in trying it out. And seeing what the relationship is between the machine and my intention, and just the randomness of, you know, a plastic lens, a weird form, a format that's unusual, all of those things. Some of these odd cameras I've actually used, as I'm sure all of us have over the years. Because if you're a photographer, there is a magnetic attraction to gear, no matter what you say. So
cameras, and I'm guilty of having a few of those weird cameras too, because it's different form factors, it's different film sizes, it's different haptics, and as much as I say the camera doesn't matter, it's the photographer and so on, but the camera does influence how you shoot and what you do. So
yeah,
the tech has its place, and weird cameras. Let's just kick this off by looking at a few things. We have a few of our own treasures here, so do a bit of a show and tell, and let's kick this off with the website that Jeremiah, you sent around. Six of the strangest 35mm cameras ever made. Canon Zoom DS8.
Now, for, you know, just to be very, very clear, these are 35mm cameras.
Right.
So these aren't six of the strangest cameras. They're specific to 35mm film, just for those of you who will get a little bored, because there's weirder ones coming.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. So these are 35mm cameras. I like the Konica.
Konica Aborg.
Aborg? What the heck is...
Yeah.
This is a weird kind of organic design with rounded... I don't even know how to explain it. It's a wide angle. No, it's a panorama camera, right?
You know, this is the kind of camera that I would say it's ultra wide angle, I guess. Not quite a panoramic in it. What we will eventually discover of, you know, a camera that actually has a lens that moves.
Yeah.
But that particular camera is one of the few cameras that makes me not want to shoot.
Me too. It is. I've never heard of it until I saw it in this article. It is very plastic.
Yeah.
And
it's like, I don't want to touch it.
Well, I have the feeling. And it might take great photos, but I have the feeling that if I hold it at its grip and squeeze, it goes creak, creak, creak. Like an you know the creaky old phones and things like that?
Sure. It's like a plushie, those of you who have kids.
And it hasn't become a famous camera, otherwise I probably would have heard of it. What is the Lomo LCA? The one camera that kicked off the Lomography movement.
Yeah, the Splitzer. So I think you could take half a picture and combine it with another half of a picture.
I see.
Yeah, the Splitzer is a way of blocking off part of the lens.
It's a filter that is half black and it rotates.
Yeah, yes.
And you can usually split it in either in half or into quarters. They do them for a range of their cameras. They're really good fun.
Yeah, this is the kind of fun that you could have if you're just determined to stay analog, because doing this digitally will take about 1 second. But right. There's a nice randomness. This is actually a fun camera, I suspect.
And process is fun, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah. Just and you never quite know what you're going to get exposure-wise. So yeah.
The Minolta Prod 20S.
I'd never seen this camera, so this is kind of a surprise to me. I couldn't really figure out what the quote advantages of this particular camera are.
It looks like it says it operates with a fixed focus system. I think it's just the design.
It felt like it just the design of that. It's like it looks like a very early Leica, doesn't it? Like a Leica 3A or something like that, or something from that age.
But it does something that several modern cameras have, and that is a fixed 35mm lens.
Mm.
So
yeah,
They're all the rage at the moment, aren't they? Fixed lens, good cameras, the Fujis and the Leicas and stuff like that.
Yeah,
right. Five on the list: Pentax Auto 110, okay. I'll do the show and tell right now.
You do the show and tell, Chris. Because
I have one here. So first of all, look at this. 80s.
That's very nice.
You've got a whole pink kit. Wow. Green.
I have an entire kit here. Yes. I have an entire kit. So it's an SLR, and the size of it is just
I remember
mind-boggling.
Those things. Yeah, it's
So it is a proper camera. It has a proper lens that focuses. Yeah.
It's an SLR?
It's an SLR. It has a mirror inside. So there we go. It works. It has interchangeable lenses. That is... Let me show you the... This is the the 18mm. Let me show you the 50mm lens.
Yeah, it's tiny.
This is the 50mm... next to my eye. This is the size of my eye, pretty much. And... It's just one of the weirdest tiny little things. It needs 110 film.
I was going to say, on a technicality, it's not actually a 35mm camera, is it? It takes a 110 film, which is why the lenses can be so small, because the image circle, and it doesn't need to be very big.
I guess the question is really, if one is kind of looking for a, quote, more professional way of taking pictures with interchangeable lenses and adjustable dynamics of exposure, why would you get a camera like that?
Let me show you the best accessory for it. I have the motor winder.
Oh, man,
the motor
good.
Winder. Awesome.
The motor good. Winder. No, there's no battery in it, but you can go click, zzz, click, zzz, click, zzz, with this weird thing dangling.
That's a hilarious camera. Hilarious.
It's great. I used to have one myself, and it was really, really good fun. It is a step up from a lot of 110 cameras, because it does have automatic exposure.
Would you call it a professional 110 camera?
Nah.
I don't think anybody, not for professional photographers. No.
Yeah, show up on a job with that, right?
The 110 cameras typically are made from injection plastic and not very...
sturdy,
not very high quality, and this one is just—it's a proper camera, and it's a Pentax.
I loved my Pentax Auto 110. It was great. I didn't have the whole kit like you do, Chris, but I had a couple of lenses for it, I think.
And of course, I bought this much later, used. Right, I didn't have it from back then.
So. The shutter was very interesting. If I remember correctly, it has a two-bladed shutter that's inside the body. Is that right? It's something like that.
Something along those lines. It's hard to see because it's so tiny. But
I see an advantage in going into the field if you're using color and black and white and ektachrome and Kodachrome, of having multiple cameras around your neck.
Right.
That don't weigh a lot.
And this one does certainly not weigh a lot. No. Reminds me to get a 110 film and... shoot another.
Can you still get 110 film processed?
Yes, you can.
Yes. Huh?
Not in every place, but there are a few places, including I think Lomography offers that.
Hmm.
And a few
well,
others.
It's them that sells the film, because I think they're at least round my way, I think they're the only brand of 110 film now.
Yeah, they're holding up the torch. All right, let's continue here. Oh yeah, next one, Horizon 202, a proper turret panorama camera. So the lens
swivels
while you take the photos, or it goes from left to right or from right to left. Which, yeah, you wrote something about that, Adrian.
Yeah, I just always wanted one, right? So I've never pulled the trigger on it, but I've always wanted something like that. A friend of mine has a Wide Lux, which I guess is
I have one of those.
Slightly more grown up version of this kind of camera.
It's the proper one. Yeah.
That's the proper one. Yes. I always wanted the Horizon. I could for some reason, I never managed to justify the expense of a Wide Lux. So,
also not quite safe to get one if you don't know it's very well maintained, because they tend to have dirt in the mechanism, and then the turret moves like with interruptions, and then you get weird stripes on the picture.
I had a Wide Lux. I used it for some fashion stuff as well. Really effectively, great lens on it, and beautiful, especially shooting with Kodachrome and a little bit of light, or experimenting with hand triggered flash. So, you know what I mean? Having that flash go off at the right moment as the lens swivels. It's a very fun camera to use, as I'm sure the Horizon is, with very little.
Whose doorbell?
That's my doorbell.
You can go.
No, my wife's in there. It's for some reason.
So Jeff Bridges is known for his Wide Lux photography.
And has a lot of pictures.
A lot of pictures, a lot from like behind the scenes, from sets and so on. There's some really cool stuff there.
Yeah.
So, all right. So that was that article, and then you just
let's
keep going. 12 bizarre cameras you forgot existed by Slashgear.
Always good.
The disc
camera.
Oh no.
Now, I had one of these.
Never had one of those. No.
Fit in your back pocket, you know. That was, I think, its big advantage. It was flat. That's all you could say about it.
Very tiny pictures, right?
Very tiny pictures, very poor quality, very bad build, but very convenient to put in the back of your jeans.
Right. So the disc, the Fisher Price PXL
2000. I still have my Fisher Price PXL 2000.
That's a video camera.
It is a video camera, and it is fantastic. It shoots on cassette tape.
No.
It does. And so it is, I mean, it's designed for aspiring film directors.
Sure. Like like 5-year-old aspiring film directors.
Yeah, but it's a lot of fun to use. It's very easy to use. I mean, the controls are like a cassette recorder, only it records visuals, I think black and white only, hyper pixelated. And you get just a tremendous, unique aesthetic out of it. And if you ever see one of these that you can pick up at a jumble sale or online cheap just to experiment, it's worth it. It's really fun. They have outputs for video, too.
Have you ever used that in any of your productions?
No, but I've come close to it.
Oh, okay.
I've come close to it. Finally,
it's a special effect, pretty much.
Pretty much. And, you know, you can get these, you can do the special effects now with more control, of course, in post. Now, here's another camera the Apple QuickTake 100. This is a digital camera, right?
I came to Apple much, much later, so.
Yeah, I missed this one as well.
This is what I like about that era of photography is, that's in mid-90s, is that digital photography was just coming on the scene, and the manufacturers were like happy to experiment with form factors. The cameras didn't look like cameras for a while, and then
That was on purpose, because I think it's like, this is new kind of photography and a new kind of aesthetic. The problem is these cameras were never really designed ergonomically correct. In other words, yes. They were awkward to hold, shoot, compose, but they were really, they were pretty sophisticated in terms of their ability to capture something. Of course, it's, I don't know, a six, what does it say? 640, 480? You know,
oh, no, 320 by 240.
That is what, and I think that was the maximum setting.
And it held 32 photos, it says here.
Yeah, and not wow. Tremendous amount of memory.
No LCD to preview the photos.
But it was quite, I think it was around the time of the Mavica. Or Mavica.
Oh, yeah, the floppy-based camera. Yeah. Does that come up in here?
I think it does on one of them.
I have to say, though, some of the maybe not quite as early as the Apple camera, but some of the sort of around the year 2000, some of the early designs, industrial designs around ergonomics and how a camera looked and felt and stuff like that, I thought were really quite good. You know, I miss some of those, you know, and whilst it's nice to have that sort of classic, you know, that digital camera with a classic, you know, old film camera SLR type look like you get with the Fujis and things like that, and of course Leica M's. I wish there were a bit more innovative thinking in camera 3D design.
I'm wondering if people, and this is probably if we did a little kind of deep dive, could find people that are building cameras. Not unique cameras, but, you know, with a small, you know, you build 1,000 of them. I mean, maybe they're on Kickstarter. I don't know. To build unique and interesting design cameras that use CNC machines, they can mill it out. It could be a little more industrial feel. And even the lens design and grinding glass and all the rest of it, to create cameras that take very specific kind of film and or digital chips, etc., and that becomes it in and of itself a creative mode. In other words, the camera itself is the creative aspect as much as taking the pictures with it.
I know a few people who are doing that sort of thing, who are running, you know, very small camera manufacturing companies, and it's really hard. To do something with a digital sensor at those low volumes is really hard because it's such an expense. The unit cost of a digital sensor is higher than you can actually charge for the camera in some cases.
But shutters are
difficult
hand,
as well because for the same similar reasons.
But on the other hand, it is really simple these days. If you're good with electronics, it's really easy to get like 500 boards printed and parts on it. So electronic projects are fairly simple to do these days if you know electronics. So.
It's very rare though you get somebody that has all the skills to do that as a micro manufacturer. So the one person I know who can do that is a chap called Dave who runs the Alfie cameras here in the UK, just up the road from me. And you'll remember I had the little half frame film camera that he made, which does have automatic exposure and does that. And he did the circuit board design and got those printed up. He worked with a guy in the States who did the lens design for it. Dave himself did all the 3D design, and he's the sort of guy in the workshop at the back of his garden. He has a CNC machine and does his own prototypes and testing and stuff like that. But to have that amount of design skill, engineering prototyping skill, electronic engineering prototyping skill,
in
coding
one person,
and programming a firmware all in one person is quite rare indeed.
This reminds me of the Hungarian photographer, blanking on his name, who builds his own cameras. I think he was very popular in the 60s, maybe, and took pictures in Hungary. But every camera he built was made of spare parts. Mm-hmm. I can find it. Talk amongst yourselves.
Don't remember, sorry. Talk amongst ourselves. Okay, well, I want to shout out then, please, while we're talking amongst ourselves. I want to shout out for Lytro here. Right? I still never managed to get a Lytro camera, unfortunately, but I was really hoping that the whole, you know, science around depth of field that the Lytro people were doing, the light field, as they called it, was going to come and be a mainstream thing in consumer cameras. As far as I'm aware, they made two consumer cameras in the end. There was the one, Chris, that you're showing just here, which is this sort of lipstick type shaped one. Although I remember it's bigger than that, isn't it? And then there was one that sort of looked like a fixed lens mirrorless camera in a way.
So the thing, well, I was trying to think about an angle to connect the, we're looking at cameras from the past mainly today, to link that to the future of photography. And one thing that I think we have now is the form factors are getting weirder again.
Oh, so I hope so. I really hope so.
If you look back, like here's the Sony Mavica, the one with the floppy disk, the lens on the left top. Now, let me show you something that we use, everyone uses, and it's called a smartphone, and that has the lens at the left top, and it's just a weird form factor for a camera, but people are accepting this as a camera. So form factors, if you look at today's, like all the action cameras, all the 360 cameras, the tiny cameras to put on your lapel and so on, they all come in strange form factors compared to traditional cameras. So I think the advent of the smartphone as a main camera for most people has paved the way for acceptance of weird form factors. Weird, not weird, but unusual compared to the traditional cameras of the last 150 years.
I think the miniaturization of these cameras, especially things like, as you say, the sort of the lapel cameras that you can just, you know, magnetically attached to your body and things like that. Yeah. I think that's a fantastic thing, right? Just for the creativity of stuff. If you want a rabbit hole to lose a couple of hours, you know, go and you know, do some searching through YouTube for things like the Insta360 Go and things like that. You know, the tiny little ones and people. Things like camera movement, intentional camera movement, not in the blur your image kind of way, but, you know, put it on the end of a stick and move it and record video, that kind of camera movement. You can do some amazing things. It reminds me of, I'm sure I've told you guys this story before, but I'll tell it again because it's worth it. A few more years ago, we were on holiday in Cornwall and we were in a cafe and my son took my camera and he took a video of the inside of a packet of crisps. And just because it was like, it's just shiny, you know, metallic inside of the packet. And I thought, wow, I would never in a million years have thought to do that. And and now, of course, not only have you got, if you've got that level of creativity that my then, I know, let's say 8-year-old, however old he was, son had, plus the form factors that you get today, I think that's amazing. I wish I had or could revisit that sort of childhood freedom of creativity. That would be awesome. Sometimes I feel like I've got a lot of photography to unlearn.
But by the way, I think that if we're talking about the future of photography, I could see a micro lens, almost like a pill, that you can insert into the ground, into a body, into a plant, into an engine, and it would transmit the image to a capture device. So it would be virtual. And I had read an article this week that there was a surgeon who performed the first operation using Apple Vision Pro, doing just that. They put a camera inside, it was a shoulder, and he did a operation where he was inside the actual structure of the body so he could work that close. And I think that kind of
thing. They made a movie about that in the 80s. I think they did. Martin Short in it. What was that movie called? I can't remember now.
It was they shrunk a submarine down with people and then injected it into a bloodstream. But for at least 20 years now, they had robots in to do surgeries with a remote virtual thing, and connecting that with a virtual thing where you, as the person operating, can be inside the body and see the blood vessel close up and so on.
I think we're getting
certainly,
there.
Certainly possible. Yeah.
Yeah, I think we're getting there. By the way, in the show notes, I did list this homemade camera builder photographer Miroslav Tichy, and
Miroslav. Nice.
Miroslav Tichy. Let's open his website. Well, that no, that's the wrong one. Okay.
I think you just eliminated it from the show notes.
Let me. Yeah. Okay.
There it is.
I should probably learn how to operate a web browser. That's what you get for not recording with me for 2 weeks.
Yeah, Miroslav Tichy is really, really worth looking at his images. I've seen them live, and they are. I may have seen the prints, but he builds these cameras out of whatever's around and uses 35mm
cardboard,
film. Yeah,
glue, string. Yeah, awesome.
Definitely, it's an interesting character and interesting stories associated with him, because he wasn't exactly respectful of people's privacy a lot of the time.
Okay. I didn't know that.
Now, this camera is very weird. This first Leica, which is a digital and film camera combined.
The DMR.
Nice.
Heaven,
and,
I bet.
And a form factor of the Leica S1.
Also interesting.
Very
square, interesting. Square format, I think.
Well, square format, weird handles, looks like a work of art more than a camera.
Does. Looks like a phone in a cage, actually, doesn't it?
The way Or that, yes.
Video makers use phones.
Rolleiflex 35, I have one of those.
I had one of those, too.
Tiny 35mm.
By the way, that camera had a very good lens, this Rolleiflex 35, yeah. Very sharp. This is one of those cameras, the Leitro, that I did make a big mistake and buy.
I know so many people who bought it and used it for like half an hour and then never used it again.
Was that bad?
Yeah. First of all, ergonomically, the camera was based on an idea. The idea was that you could adjust the focus later. Great idea. Like that. Of course, now it's normal with editing software, but to be able to take a picture and then determine where the focus was, great. But why a brick? I mean, you could never find the buttons. It was impossible. The screen was so small.
Well, it didn't have buttons. It had touch fields.
it was just the worst.
So, and then, I mean, the limitations, if you wanted to give other people, to have other people change focus in your images, you had to embed something from their server and... If you rendered out a photo, I think the original Leitro, it was 1 megapixel square.
Yeah, we could say this was a good idea, poorly executed.
Wonderful idea, yeah. Didn't really catch on. The Light L16. Remember that one?
Yes. Did they ever end up making this camera?
A few people, I think, have had them, but the software wasn't that good, and you had to process the images later on. So this is the weird slab that has 16 cameras built in, 16 different focal length small cameras, and the whole thing was then doing some computation. I installed the software. I got the Mac software and a few demo pictures to play with, and I think I remember the rendering of one of these pictures took like a minute or something. So it was from a experience point, it wasn't that.
I was brilliant. Very tempted when they announced this camera. I thought, now this is a really good idea. A small camera with multiple lenses that took the same picture, all different focal lengths, that you could, I mean, creatively, I think that would have been really exciting. I just sat back and waited for it to become a thing before I would test it. And I checked in with them constantly for about a year, you know, just following it. And it never evolved. I don't think I ever saw one in real life. Like Chris said, I think the software was very incomplete.
It was very clunky initially, and it never went beyond that phase.
It was kind of a good idea, badly executed
again. Oh, and I think just a construction nightmare. 16 cameras.
Yeah. Also, I think it was very expensive. I think it was expensive, yeah. This camera.
It's interesting, but some of these things I thought were great. And Jeremiah, you said, with light, like the Lightro, the gimmick that it had, that you could refocus after the event, is now achievable in software or just even on phones these days. And I think it's amazing the way the software has caught up with some of those hardware ideas from five plus years ago.
Not just the software, but if you look at our smartphones, they take 10 pictures for each picture you take and then do the math and the juggling of things. If you go and switch over to the long focal length on your smartphone, it typically doesn't use that because the camera is not as good. It crops into the normal one to the point where the quality is... where the quality switches over to the other one. It's so much math and computation.
The other one that I thought that there's a whole category which we haven't really talked about, which is cameras that are companions to your smartphone. So
you
cameras
mean the
like
DxO1.
That's where I was going to go. Actually, yes, the DxO1.
I had one of these. I had one of these. I thought these were fantastic and very, very well executed. I mean, for quality, remember what your phone. Your phone had a very poor camera. The DxO camera
was really,
really good. And their software, of course, was excellent and relatively. And it was small. Form factor was really, you can carry it in your pocket, slam it in, and basically be shooting. I think they had a version of a RAW file that was very compatible with Lightroom, etc.
So you plug that into the port on your smartphone, and it turned your smartphone into a viewfinder.
Excellent. This was something excellent, and DxO I think got out of the hardware business and focused exclusively on software.
The Avantgarde Optic Smiling Face Brooch Spy Camera. Okay, that is more of a gimmick, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so.
This one again. Oh, here now let's go analog. Let's go analog. Lomography Constructor F Do-It-Yourself 35mm Film SLR Camera Kit.
Hmm.
So this is a...
fun for the whole family.
This is an afternoon of a project, probably...
It's the IKEA.
I'm not sure I know anybody who's ever had one of these that was happy with the photos it took or was able to completely light seal it or anything.
This one piece is missing.
I think it's more the experience of being able to say, I built a camera.
Yes.
I think you're right.
Yeah. They did a limited edition one, I think, that was made of clear plastic.
Very helpful.
Clear, obviously not designed to be light tight, designed to be an ornament of some kind, but it's a bit of fun.
I know, again, go visit Miroslav Tichy's website and follow up on him, because he built cameras out of garbage. But the photos were particularly interesting, beautiful.
Right.
So... it's possible and fun to just take a shot at optics and old lenses or Coke bottles and just make what it is you want. It's a nice, it's just an interesting hobby.
It shows that it doesn't take a lot of tech to evoke emotion with a photo.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
Right.
That was deep, right?
It was deep.
It was for this show, because this show's just all about silly toys.
All right. Any last few cameras that you wanted to show here?
Do the 100 strangest cameras, and we'll just rip through those quickly.
To 100,
Just at the end of the show, we'll do 100 extra cameras.
In the last five minutes.
We'll just select some of our favorites here.
A cheaper Banga 1994 little yellow plastic thing.
Yeah.
The Adox 66. Oh, yeah, that's a mini, 120 medium format.
Yeah, of course. The classic.
Pocket. My dad had one of those.
Yeah, those are
110 film with a big red button. That was a thing.
Yeah.
Agfa-matic.
Lots of Agfas then.
All right. I think we'll just put all these links in the show notes.
Have fun with them. And a lot of these you can find on eBay all around there. And you know, if you could pick some of these up cheap and the film is still available, it's really worth exploring because it makes you appreciate your smartphone.
I have one to show you. One last show and tell here.
Okay.
Mm.
A Mercury 2, which is a 35 millimeter camera with a rotational shutter. So the round thing you see up here, there's a disc in there, and when you take the picture, this whole disc rotates 360 degrees.
Wow. Okay.
And you change the shutter speed by it's a wedge in the disc that you open up. So the wedge
like an old movie camera.
Bigger. Yep. But it only does one revolution, and then it goes, click, done.
Nice.
And it's just such a beautiful piece of
It's nice. Art. I mean, there's sculpture. Yeah.
It's a sculpture. Yes.
Yeah.
So this is one of my favorite cameras. One of my
very
favorites.
Nice indeed.
All right, gentlemen.
Picks.
Picks of the week.
It's time for our picks. Let me find the windows where I put these.
I want
to kick this off with a link to a YouTube video. And it is a guy who tests the camera from Rear Window, Hitchcock movie from 1954 that features a photographer and a very specific camera. And this guy, first he does the detective work of finding out what camera it is exactly. So he buys like 12 cameras to find the proper model and make and year and so on. Turns out it is an Eastern German Exacta camera. One of the first single lens reflex SLRs. And so it's a wonderful like detective story, and then he tests it and he takes pictures with it, and he finds the exact lens and what attachments and so on. So it is an actual movie prop from Eastern Germany. How about that?
Oh, yes, it's the camera equivalent of an MZ motorcycle.
Oh, there we go. All right, Jeremiah, you brought us.
I did. I thought I would just end it with my favorite bizarre camera ever.
That's a camera. I thought that was more of an attachment, but no, it's an actual
camera. It's a sequence.
Eight lenses?
It's a sequence camera. So it's an Edward Muybridge with a Polaroid back.
I see. Okay.
So that's a very specific camera, shall we say.
And do you set the speed of the sequence?
I think you can set the speed of the...
Or the shutter speed.
The shutter speed, yeah.
Okay.
And then it'll just rat-tat-tat-tat-tat click over some kind of mechanical adjustment that kind
the
of
shutter
triggers
speed, the shutter speed dial is dull, normal, and bright.
Yeah.
13579, okay.
And the one thing about this camera, pursuant to our discussions, it is a beautiful work of art. I mean, it is a lovely looking, very solid, you know, all metal, odd design for a very specific purpose. The thing that I quite couldn't get is... why put a Polaroid back on it if you're taking a sequence? Because the sequence would be so little.
Not much space on these.
You could use the negative from...
It reminds me, like with these eight lenses, it reminds me of like a weird insect of sorts.
Yeah. I thought, interesting.
This is
you
fun
know?
Looking.
Yeah, great looking camera. They did make them. They're, you know, it's a model. There you go.
They're still selling it. Vintage refurbished, only $283. Euros. I could buy this.
So there you go.
Now.
Yeah.
Wow. Very cool. And last but not least, Adrian, you brought us a YouTube channel.
Jay Foreman is a British comedian. And he has, as he says on his YouTube channel, he makes very silly educational videos. One of the long running series he has on his channel, which he does with another comedian, they're both stand up comedians, called Mark Cooper Jones, is a series called Map Men, which just if either of you have any interest in maps and cartography at all, these are well researched, hilariously written educational videos about why maps go wrong and all sorts of stuff.
You do get to learn something.
You do get to learn something, and it's not just focused on the UK. It's stuff from all over the world, and they just have some very, very silly videos. But there's a lot of thought and effort goes into them. They only publish them about every 3 months or so.
I like these channels that don't feed the algorithm and post something 3 times a week just to post something. This guy apparently puts work in it and research, and then every 3 months say that sounds like a good frequency.
Is this what would be an equivalent in terms of the genre? I don't know if you're familiar with Kunk on Earth, a British show.
Fellow minor Kunk. Yeah.
Yes and no. So they're not. They're not doing that whole pretend to be legit thing that character does. That it also came back. And the other classic was the Sacha Baron Cohen character, Ali G, who's one of his very early characters. Yes. And then Borat after that, who pretends. It's not like that. It's just downright silly. It's almost slapstick. But they do some great things. He also has another series on the channel, occasional series he calls Unfinished London. And it's things like, it's all about, things, development programs in London that just went wrong or were never finished. And why do roads look like the way they do? And why does the tube network look like the way it does? And things like that.
It sounds really funny.
Yeah, it's more slapstick style, though, than spoof documentary.
All right. So I guess that brings us to the end of this episode. Good to be back with you. I'm going to spend some time on this 100 camera site. There's so much fun stuff in there. I mean, this one looks so weird.
Yeah. And they have Mavicas and, oh, look at that.
The compass.
Yeah.
A stereo realist. I have one.
I had one. Me too. Yeah. I have a
fun,
whole
fun little thing. Never really stuff. Managed to get it to work.
Spy camera.
Oh man, that is
lots of things there.
This is all a rabbit hole for the listeners and viewers.
So, Chris, while you're hitting the outro music, I'd just like to take a minute. It's already running. Okay, I'd like to take a minute to say this is show number 300, guys.
Yay! Hold on. Hold me. I'll bring us back and kill the outro just for that. It is episode 300.
Yeah. Yes, it is episode 300. So we started this podcast, Chris, as I'm sure you remember, in the back courtyard of your friend's restaurant in Kathmandu in November 2017.
Yes.
So we've been running. So clearly we haven't done one every week because we'd be up to about 350 by now if we did. But so we've been running for 6.5 years, just over 6.5 years. And we've done 300 episodes. So well done, everybody.
And we're still not famous. Anyway, thanks everyone for being with us. Whoever is with us has been with us for 300 episodes. We want to hear from you.
Absolutely.
Send us a thing on Discord.
Yes, and Adrian will build you a camera out of cardboard.
All right. Thanks, gentlemen. And see you next week. Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.